You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This is episode 171 of Retired Racehorse Radio on the Horse Radio Network, part of Equine Network, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products and U.S. Rider. Retired Racehorse Radio is your guide to the adoption, care, and training of the retired racehorse, brought to you in cooperation with the Retired Racehorse Project and New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program.
On today's show, we speak with Carrie Brogdon, a driving force in some new thoroughbred competition options, paying out big prize money in 2026. Then we meet an adoptable horse of the week and a new training tip with New Vocations' Bridget Heasley. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Retired Racehorse Radio.
This is Joy Orr in Detroit, Michigan.
And this is Kristen Kovach-Bentley in Jamestown, New York, and you are listening to Retired Racehorse Radio.
So listeners, I'm going to give you a fair warning. I'm speaking in more of an NPR way because I have a sleeping baby on me right now.
Not I like your NPR voice.
Podcasting, but you also might hear her talk in her sleep as well. And yes, babies do that.
Good to know, because if I didn't know that and I heard her doing that, I'd be like, what is happening? Like, if I were babysitting, this is one of many reasons you don't have me babysitting. Like, one of which being that we live many hours away from each other. But like, yeah, I'd be like, hey, Joy, she's like, something's happening. Like, you have to come back. She's talking. So yeah, I appreciate the disclaimer. I also really like your NPR voice.
Yeah, you know, babies talking in their sleep. It's a weird phenomenon. It used to really scare me, and now I think it's hilarious.
I want to like match my voice to your voice. Listeners, if you listen to this like while you're driving or something, we'll stop because we don't want to lull anyone to sleep with our soothing NPR voices. So you can always rest assured I will be loud and obnoxious at all times. So I got us covered.
You know, just imagine this is, you know, Retired Racehorse Radio, thoroughbred industry at night. It's relaxed.
After hours.
We're here to lower your cortisol as you're heading to work, or worse, you're chasing a horse that got loose in the field, whatever it may be. We're here to soothe you through it.
Sleep stories. Bye. There, actually, we have sleep stories on this network, don't we?
I think we do, actually. I would be proud for it.
All right, folks. If people are down for that, then search Horse Radio Network, because I'm pretty sure we have a equestrian sleep stories podcast. So give that one a try. Let us know how it is. Not generally a thing I have a problem with. I fall asleep very easily because I'm exhausted all the time. So
now I will say we didn't record this in order. So when you get halfway through the episode,
Joy's going to perk back up.
Don't be surprised.
Well, Joy, you mentioned off air that you were seeking getting back into the saddle again, which is very exciting.
I am. And I'm taking it slow. So my goal is like springtime, because if I had the opportunity to be a fair weather rider for the first time in my life, I'm going to do it. I don't want to start riding in like the change of seasons, because we all know how horses are as they have cold days and warm days and winds. That's not the vibe I'm going for. I want it to be like a nice spring day. So I'm hoping to get back in April is my goal. And I'm aiming for two times a month, which feels very ambitious with two infants, but they are starting to get older and a little more independent for me. We're almost solid. We have another month to go. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. But I'm looking now for a dressage barn, although I might take hunters. I might mix it up. Just, you know, I have the opportunity when I... not having my own horse right now, I'm like, wow, I could lesson on anything.
You could try Western dressage. You could do a little ranch work.
There are similar Western performance barns near us too. So I'm like, I might just kind of like
just dabble
around and have some fun.
I will say our conversation with our guests today, if that does not entice people to try the hunters, I don't know what will. I'm super excited to have that conversation as part of this episode. So yeah, like that's some big time incentives for the hunters, just to tease that a little bit. But yeah, I'm excited for you. I think you should like sort of do like the Tour de Michigan lesson barns and try all the disciplines.
I know. I think it could be quite fun. I'm also looking at potentially like working equitation once I get at least my strength back. I think that'd be really fun too. So yeah, I think it'd be nice to just kind of like dabble lesson with some different people, get some other perspectives. But there's nothing wrong with my current barn. It is really just like I have an opportunity and I know basics enough where it's like, oh, why don't I go out and try something new and just kind of see what I like? And that might influence the next horse we buy.
Well, and it is a good opportunity to just dabble in something new. Like it is a little bit of like a, I don't want to say a fresh start, right? But like you have kind of like a blank slate in a way. Yeah. So yeah, cool idea.
And I will say the venting is not on there. I do not have fine. Balls big enough to do it. I just don't. Even starter level, I just don't.
It's fine. We can appreciate it from a distance.
Oh yeah, I love watching it, but ooh, I got sweaty and just like a reflective meeting celebrating my 3 years at my job. Like, and you want me to jump a solid fence? No. But how about you? I saw that you had some winter rides much sooner than planned.
Yeah. Well, you know, after the horses got loose and wore themselves out, I was like, wait, hang on. This is a great opportunity because we don't have good places to lunge. You know, and I don't like to lunge to get the energy out of them because they're thoroughbred. So you have to go pretty far to kind of like take the edge off. But fortunately they did that for me when they took their like wild hot lap of the farm, which I think we talked about in our last episode. And if we didn't, I also teased it on our Facebook page. But yeah, the next day I was like, okay, fam, like we're saddling up and we're riding. So my mom came out, Eric came out, like we took all three horses out and we just went on a light hack, which I thought was a good idea anyway. Cause I was like, if you guys all just ran yourselves silly, like a little bit of like light forced movement is probably a good idea the next day so that no one's just standing around getting stiff and sore. They were all lovely. And then the day after that, I snuck in a solo ride on Jobber. And the nice thing with Jobber is now at age 17, which is crazy. I can't believe he's 17.
It was 15. Kyle and I were just talking about it the other day.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I'm like, oh, you're like a senior. And like a proper, like the like other side of 15 senior. You know, and this is not to say that he won't still be a fire-breathing dragon when he wants to be, but, like, I think we sort of have an arrangement now where, like, I will tolerate some level of that if he will also just, like, be a cool dude. So he picked a cool dude day. You know, and I kind of let him decide where he wanted to go. So he took me across the creek to go look at cows. We still have a bull turned out that I don't trust. So I was like, we're not going to go in with the cows, but we'll stand and look at them from the gate until that bull gets pulled. You know, and he was like, hello, cows. And they were like, oh, hello, Jobber, like our mean overlord, and looked back at him. And then, you know, we turned and meandered back the other way and went around the gravel mine and checked fences and just like meandered on back to the barn. And I was like, this is lovely. Like, maybe this is all I want to do. It's just, and sometimes like that's a lot of what I did last summer was just like get on and wander around. And he seems quite happy with it. And I'm happy with it. So, you know, that might be our 2026. Go enjoy our time.
So, like, honestly, nothing more romantic than a relationship of a horse girl with her horse. Like, I don't know. This is going to sound really cheesy. Don't get mad at me and don't defriend me from this. I watched, it's old, the Kendall Jenner video of her with Vogue talking about her horse, Arizona.
I don't think I've ever seen this.
I have to send it to you. It's just an interview for Vogue. I'm not a big Kardashian Jenner fan. I don't really care for much of their stuff. And if you do, that's fine. I'm not here to de-influence you. It's just not my cup of tea. However, it came up in my suggested like YouTube videos when I was cleaning. I was like, sure. And that is probably the most genuine I've ever seen Kendall Jenner present herself.
Oh.
Like, it was soft. She almost had like a nervousness, a youthfulness to her that she never has in anything else she does. And I was like, that is the power of horses. It just makes us feel young again and free and relaxed, except when they're trying to kill themselves. But every other time, it's really nice.
Yeah. And, you know, I sometimes I was thinking about this when I was riding Jobber you know, around, just, you know, on a loose rein, just kind of ambling around and looking at stuff. I had said to my mentor, she had come to, I think, to either teach me a lesson or to look at Jobber because he was just coming out of a lameness. And I think at the time I put a strap around his neck and made her give me a leg up. And I just was sitting on him with just the strap around his neck, like no saddle, no bridle, you know, and was just like faffing around, jogging circles around her and like giggling. And this was like not that long ago, like 5-6 years max. And I said to her, I was like, I just feel like every person needs at some point in their life the horse that makes them feel like a little kid again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she looked at me and she smiled and she's like, yeah, that's what my horse Gandalf is for me. You know, and then Gandalf was that gray horse that we had for a while after she passed away. She left him to me to take care of, you know, and so like that was very important to me to be like, Gandalf, I know you were that horse for Nancy, so we're going to take good care of you. But yeah, I do think that that's a thing. Everyone needs a horse at least at one point in their life, and it's great if you can have that over and over again, but the horse that makes you feel like a kid again. So
yeah,
hopefully everyone finds that horse.
That's the one I'm looking for again. I had the one. My little black Arabian. Astrid made me feel amazing, like empowered. But I always felt like Astrid, like, I needed to be like a big sister to Astrid a lot of times and like guide her through things. Where like Savvy, my little black Arab, it was, she took care of me in every stance. And I feel like at this stage in my life where I am, I'm not necessarily looking for like hot-blooded, ready to go. Like I do kind of want like that old soul, wise in the eyes horse. Like, so yeah, it's going to be interesting to like try some different disciplines and see like what else has changed. Like, am I still very dressage forward or am I ready to expand somewhere else?
I love this. I'm so excited for you.
Me too.
Keep us posted. I know you will.
Yeah. And like I said, it'll be nice too, because like my kids never touch grass, so I really can't wait to get them outside. Well, it's going to be a good episode. I think we've accidentally teased both our horse of the week and also talking about hunters. So I hope listeners are ready. It was not intentional, but I feel very professional in how that happened. But totally before we get into that, we're going to hear from our premier sponsor, Kentucky Performance Products.
Is your horse showing signs of metabolic dysregulation, such as weight gain, unhealthy insulin levels that can lead to unsoundness, or issues with the structural integrity of the lamina within the hoof? InsulinWise has been research proven to support a decrease in insulin dysregulation. A synergistic blend of polyphenols and amino acids, InsulinWise helps maintain normal metabolic function and healthy insulin levels, support a healthy body weight and normal fat distribution, and sustain normal structural integrity of the lamina in the hoof. To see if InsulinWise, available through veterinarians, is right for your horse, speak with your vet, visit kppusa.com, or call 859-873-2974. Well, it is like way overdue to have our guest on this show, because Carrie, you have been doing some really cool things in the thoroughbred industry on like all sides of the thoroughbred industry, the aftercare side and the racing side. We're super excited to have with us Carrie Brogdon on the show today. Carrie, welcome to Retired Racehorse Radio.
Thank you so much for asking me.
Yeah. So, I mean, like the stuff that's making the headlines right now, which we're going to get to, you know, is all of your work to really develop like big prize money, some like upper level classes in the thoroughbred sport horse world, which is super exciting and kind of long overdue in that space. But before we get into all of that, let's just learn a little bit more about you, because you wear so many hats in the industry on the equestrian side, on the racehorse side, and everything in between. So introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got to where you are.
Sure. Well, my husband and I have been married, 23 years, and he's Australian. We met here in Lexington, Kentucky, and I was actually born into the industry. My parents are both small animal veterinarians. My aunt and uncle are large animal veterinarians at Cornell, and my parents had thoroughbreds and a thoroughbred stallion when I was growing up in Virginia, and then we moved to Ocala, and we had a farm right literally in the like center of town now, 200 acres there called Terra Farm. And then my parents got divorced and moved back up to Virginia, and all the horses were liquidated. And then after college, after I graduated college in the 90s, my mom got back into it, and so did I. And so I just kind of came to Kentucky and got the bug and haven't left since. And I mean, I love my first love, other than my kids and my dogs and my husband, my first love is horse racing thoroughbreds. And my second love is second career thoroughbreds. So that's kind of, you know, I've kind of been around them my whole life. And my mom brought home my first pony in the back of the station wagon when she was 9 months pregnant. Her name was Lassie. So it's been a love affair of horses my whole life.
I love that. I also like to, like, you know, you said you were born into horses, but yeah, I think like a lot of times we think of the racing industry like, you know, these very old racing families, and that's not always necessarily the case. So we always like to hear about people, you know, who maybe like left and found their way back, or, you know, were born into it in a certain extent, but then sort of shifted in the industry. So, so yeah, you are a girl after our own hearts. So,
oh yeah, no, definitely not the Kentucky, and the Kentucky mainstay families. I know what you're talking about, but no, not a part of that. But, you know, Lexington, gosh, if anyone gets a chance to visit here, it is so special. It is so beautiful. And the horse farms are just amazing. And then you have all kinds of breeds and the horse park. And it's my home. And I feel so blessed to live here. It's a wonderful Midwest valued town. And people are so friendly. And there's just a lot of stuff to do. I encourage anyone that can come out to visit to do so.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much to do. Yeah. Every time I go, I go with local friends who take me to new restaurants. And I'm like, oh, man. We just have, yeah, Joy and I kind of live, well, I in particular live in the middle of nowhere, so I always enjoy my visit to the big city of Lexington by comparison.
You get a chance to go to Keeneland. Like if somebody comes during the Keeneland meets during April or October, it's a 3-week meet, you will see horse racing done right. Yes. I mean, it is just, it's a boutique meet. It's packed, beautiful people everywhere, beautiful horses everywhere. It is just the best time.
I love Keeneland. Yeah, that's such a special track. So historic, too. Yeah. Love it. All right, cool. Well, yeah, let's get into, you know, some of the cool headlines that you have been behind just this year. I mean, I think all this news rolled out like early 2026, and there was a new headline just today. We're recording at the end of February. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, let's talk about your $25,000 Hunter Derby at Upperville, because that is a big deal.
Well, all this started back in OBS March. My daughter does the jumpers, and she has a warm blood that does the jumpers, and she had a big egg horse at that time. And I was explaining to Roderick Watchman, who's actually, the Watchman boys are very famous jumper riders, but their family's all on the horse racing side of things. And I was telling Roderick Watchman how my daughter's warm blood that was an egg horse wasn't worth more, because the Hunter Derbies and everyone wants a Hunter Derby horse. And all of a sudden my brain, I literally was talking to him and I was like, that's it. That's it. We need to start a Hunter Derby series with obscene prize money. And just wait, it ain't obscene yet. Obscene prize money to have people open their doors to second career thoroughbreds. And believe me, the day I can get rid of the word retired and adopted will be the day that I have known I've done my job in creating this second tier, they're basically second careers. I mean, because people, mm-hmm. you know. So anyway, so we started this big push and we, you know, I got involved. My sister's name is Christy Wilberth, and she's in Virginia. And she does all the show hunters. And she was talking to Dale, who's one of the major judges on the East Coast. And it turns out the USHJA was starting a thoroughbred task force, which they've been trying for 10 years. So anyway, I got on it. And then Jen Reutz, who's the former director of the RRP, who now does her own retraining and breeding. I mean, she's just amazing in every way. She's on the task force too. So basically, we started putting this out that we wanted to develop a rock solid Hunter Derby series. We want to start focusing on the hunters first with the pie in the sky idea of then going to the jumpers, then the eventers, then the barrel racers. But that's all long term, all for thoroughbreds I'm talking about only.
Right.
So we started this idea, and it's we want to launch that series in 2027. But what happens is Sue Lyman, she was like, this is the greatest idea. And she went and I guess they had presented the idea of what they're going to do to the board at Upperville. And the Upperville board went crazy. They were so like, yay, this is amazing. This is incredible. We don't want to wait till 2027. We want to start a class now. So that's what happened. So within the $25,000 class that's going to be held in June, that is actually separate, and that is funded by the horse riding world. The equestrian world, okay. The sport horse world has funded that. So it's a $25,000 Hunter Derby. And then I've also found out for that this hasn't been press released yet, but there's also going to be big money for the Take Two class there for the Thoroughbred Hunters. And there's going to be big money there for the Take Two class for the jumpers. So Upperville is like an anchor coming up here, obviously, for the Thoroughbreds. And it's been an anchor show for the Thoroughbreds for many years. Now we're really going to see it. And you guys don't even know, but pretty soon there's going to be a big press release because the Warrington Horse Show is also going to have a major Hunter Derby too. So those press releases are all tabled to come out. The evening after the Upperville class, they've already raised the money for it. We're having a $10,000 party there, and it's already been sponsored, and it's going to be a launch party to hopefully be able to tell everybody the particulars of the 2027 series, which is the Thoroughbred Renaissance series that hopefully will be making its way forward.
I love that. I also, first of all, appreciate getting a little exclusive here on Retired Racehorse Radio about all these headlines that aren't out yet. So that's very cool. And Upperville, you know, if you're not familiar, like Upperville's in Virginia. It's like the heart of like that old school, like Virginia hunt country, like where the Thoroughbred still has, I think, a big foothold down there, which I think is really important, you know, to mention. Like it's in one of the best places it could be, I think, to kind of like be the birthplace of, you know, maybe this movement starting. Because I've been in that area, like, you know, to visit folks I know down there. And I'm like, wow, this is like really cool. Like hunt country, Thoroughbred country. Like, yeah, they're big fans of everything.
Absolutely.
Down there,
so. And like when even after college, I remember specifically going to scout horses at Charlestown. Now, this is back when you could actually buy a horse from the racetrack for like $3,500 or whatever. And then you could put 60, 90, whatever days on it. And then you'd have a resale horse that you made up. And obviously in the past few decades, that has gone from functional to now, I mean, we're changing it, but basically the Thoroughbreds became the pariah in the sport horse world. And I mean, it's driven me crazy. It's driven me crazy so much that I used to get angry at my sister. You know, my sister, like I said, she does the riding horse, show horses in Virginia. And I'd be like, I have this amazing 16-2 hand. He's gorgeous. He's incredible. And blah, blah, blah. And she was like, it's a Thoroughbred. Eh. And so I used to get angry. And then I realized instead of being angry for so many years about it, why did this change? When I was a kid growing up I used to show against Haven Schott and her pony Special Effects and Time. And back then in the 80s, the Thoroughbred was king. That's all everyone had. Mm-hmm. Everyone. And keep in mind also, the Thoroughbred racehorse breeding side of things back in the 80s, we were having 50,000 plus foals born a year. Okay. So it's very different now, but there's only about 17,000. So that was my big push of like understanding the mechanism of why and obviously one of the big reasons is we all know from the Warmbloods is rideability. And I totally understand that. So, you know, the Thoroughbred enthusiast that can actually have a chance of competing and making as much, if not more, when they're showing their Thoroughbred second career, I mean, gosh, that's game changing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, to like incentivize that at that level and, you know, at the Hunter Derby level, right? Like that's not like a crossrail class. Like that's a proper competitive, bigger height, bigger fences. Like, that's a true test of a good hunter. So you're going to see a good show.
Yes, absolutely. And there'll be all sorts of, like, there's going to be incentives built in as, you know, of horses that have come through either and participate in the RRP or the TIP or take two championships. All those horses, the incentives for them to keep going forward will follow the horse. So we are acutely aware that we want to make sure that the programs that are in place they're symbiotic and that they're not competitive.
Right.
We want to build the thoroughbred ecosystem all the way up to the top. And obviously there's only going to be a certain amount of horses that are big and fancy and going to be able to compete in the Hunter Derbies.
Right.
But in the meanwhile, while people are figuring it out, you're going to see a lot of horses get a lot of professional training because they're going to have value. And then with the Take Two classes, like the Take Two classes that just came out today that are going to be sponsored at the horse park, that's 20 hunter and jumper classes, but the hunter classic class is going to be at 2.6 and the jumper class is going to be at a meter. So those are heights where people can really, I mean, those are a perfect way to get your horse going and showing, make some money on the side, cover your bills, which is unheard of. I know, because my daughter has two warm bloods. She was champion of WEC Ohio with her warm blood this weekend in the 3-foot adult amateur. And she was like, mom, guess what? I covered my entry fees with my winning. And I was like, great. You know,
I know that's a good weekend, right? You're like, I broke even.
Yeah. I was like, now we have the Airbnb, the Breeder. The
right.
Yeah, exactly.
So, no, I love that. And I love that kind of idea of a progression, right? Because like yes. The makeover we know has had a huge impact, but that is good for that first year of retraining. So and that was incentivizing continued development of those horses. And I think that's really exciting because we need that next step for sure.
You're absolutely right. And that's what was happening. Like, and I actually, when Jen was director, I actually was on the board of the RP for several years. And it was, when it came out, it was exciting and new and awesome. And everyone was like, yes, this is great. But then that's what happened. Okay. All right. The horse competed for a year. Now what?
Right. Yeah. Where do we go now?
Exactly. So this is the answer. This is where we're going now. This is where you can go. And we're going to make all these people who have, I mean, I get so sick of seeing the posts. I mean, it literally made me sick. Like, oh, no thoroughbreds. I in search of this, in search of that. I want this, I want that. Oh, by the way, no thoroughbreds. I mean, I would see that on like literally 90% of the posts. Mm-hmm. And then when we launched the Upperville, your press release about the $25,000 Derby that's going to be held in June. My friend Shannon Griffin, she screenshot it and sent it to me, and she was like, "Look at this," and it was a in search of OTTB thoroughbred that can compete in the new Hunter Derby Series, budget $45,000, and I was
there we go.
I started, and I can admit this because I'm female. That's okay. I started like I started bawling because I was like, "Oh my gosh." For the first time, I felt like, wow, people are going to be incentivized to get back. Because the nostalgia, all these trainers, like my daughter trains with Emil Spadone. I mean, people in their 50s and 60s and whatever, they all grew up in the backs of thoroughbreds just like I did. So there's a big nostalgia play there also for the trainers.
I love it. Well, and I love this kind of like, I came up through RRP under Jen Reutz as our first executive director. So, you know, I kind of like picked up a lot of her like phrases, and she used to use the phrase all the time, a rising tide lifts all boats. And obviously I know she didn't invent that phrase, but she used that a lot to kind of describe the work of the RRP. But this is great because like, I think the RRP has done a lot in its space. And now this is bringing up, because now if someone can sell their really good, like did the makeover really good hunter, if there's a market now for that horse to be sold, then that puts real money back in the pocket of a trainer who can go and develop more horses via the makeover. through RRP. And well, it's going to bring everybody up, right? It's going to lift both events. So that's
also
awesome.
Like I said, I'm not at liberty to say yet, but there will be incentives for those horses to compete as they come up the ladder in these. There will be incentives moving forward that will follow them in their careers as they go on through these Derby series.
Which is a great bonus, but I mean, you wouldn't even need that. Even if a trainer is able to sell a horse, you know, for $30,000-$40,000 to do that event, like, that's awesome. Like, let alone having an additional bonus at the event for that horse. Like, that's we're working towards, right? Is like having these horses worth like real money.
Yes.
you know, in a second.
And we just want to make sure that we, you know, we understand how much money that, you know, the TA, well, I'm using all the alphabet organizations, but the TAA, the TCA, the jockey club, all of these organizations put into all the varying programs and shows. And we want to make sure that we are acutely aware of that and build upon those classes and shows. We don't. And the good thing is, the best thing I think is that the sport horse world is a lot of women, and women are communicators, and we are yappers. And it's something it is a very different dynamic where I come from the horse racing world, where it's not like that at all. So for me, it's actually a bit refreshing, and I can show my emotional side a lot more. Now, I'm in my 50s now, and I used to mentor young women in the thoroughbred racing industry, and I'd be like, when they come in under me, I'm like, you can't do this, you can't do that, think like a man, and, you know, and now as I'm getting older, I'm like, you know, that might not have been the best advice. Mm. I mean, because now I'm like, but there are major differences in women and men, and that's okay. And so now I'm starting to pivot off that and say, well, the women, they think our brains think differently. We are emotional beings, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's great.
Because so are thoroughbreds, right? Like, have you met a thoroughbred? That's an emotional being as well.
Absolutely. But
I think this is where aftercare, right? Like, we work together. Aftercare is largely run by women, right? So I think that's where we start to think more collaboratively in this space.
So, no doubt. Truth be told, people do not realize I realize it because I'm in the thick of it. The horse racing world does not understand what's going on in the sport horse world. And the sport horse world does not understand what's going on in the race world. There are people like me and some people that float between both and understand both, but ultimately, the demise of the thoroughbred sport horse in the ring is a big part of fault of people not realizing those dynamics and not realizing that the dynamics were happening. And, you know, when the quote unquote warm blood invasion happened in the 90s, I mean, when I was a kid, we used to have non-thoroughbred classes. I mean, look how much it changed.
Wow.
So if we in the horse racing world had realized more what was going on, these kind of incentivized things could have helped. No, I'm not saying, I mean, my daughter rides warm bloods. I love warm bloods. I'm not looking to oust the warm bloods. I'm looking for the thoroughbreds to be able to get a spot in the barns with them. Mm.
Yeah. Just enhance the opportunities for them. I love
I mean, and warm bloods are expensive. I mean, right. You know, people that are good riders, which is a lot of what it is in Virginia, why Upperville and Warrenton and, you know, those kind of zones. I think it's like zone 2, 3, 4, 5 are basically the big thoroughbred zones. And a lot of those people can ride and you can't, I mean, the thoroughbred's kind of known as the poor man's warm blood for a long time, but these new incentives and incentive classes, maybe they're going to change it and they'd be like, the thoroughbred is the poor man's rich horse. I don't know, something funny. I have to come up from that. But
I love that you bring that up, though, Carrie, because, I mean, we've talked about on the show before that it's not even just about bringing up the wealth of the thoroughbred for their protection and their incentive, but also how do we keep generations of riders going? Like, we're seeing people get you know, costed out of the sport because horse prices are going up. If you want to compete, the cost to compete is going up. And so they like these show series are starting to come back up where it is more accessible. And I mean, we've said it a million times, thoroughbreds are one of the most athletic, most versatile, capable horses you can find. And they're going to be able to take you places that you want to go without necessarily having to spend all this money to import a warm blood. Warm bloods are great, but if you don't have that warm blood budget, a thoroughbred is not the default bad side. It's just another option.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree more with you. I was talking to actually Shannon today, and she was saying how she was in Wellington right now, and the average warm blood for the hunter derbies down there that are, you know, the top level ones, top level hunters, is $750. I mean, that's obscene money. And that's 98
bonkers money.
Yeah. 99% of people can't afford that or come close to it. So yes, absolutely. Will the thoroughbred and these incentives and these, you know, big money classes? I mean, right now the classes are between $1,750 and $25,000, but I can tell you the classes I'm planning on bringing in are going to eclipse that. So it's one of those things where we're going to, number one, allow those people that have been loyal and thoroughbred enthusiasts to come. They're going to have the upper hand coming into these series because A, they know how to ride them, and B, they have them and are showing them. So that's going to be a big plus for the loyalty. And they are a different breed. I mean, they can be handier. They can be quicker. I mean, after I quit riding when I was 16 and I came back, when I was back in the thoroughbred world, I went to Ocala and I was watching the two-year-old sales. In the thoroughbred horse racing world, we have two-year-old sales where the horses breeze in front of the stands and people buy them that way. And I was like, oh, I'll just go to Hits. And I haven't seen a horse show, you know, for a long time. This is when my kids were really young and hadn't started showing. And I couldn't believe the fact that everything was in the slowest of slow motions, because it'd been so many years for me that I was down when everyone was showing thoroughbreds. I mean, you were booking around those rings. It was handy.
It was more like a hunter, like a proper field hunter.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So, I mean, today on Twitter, one of the people responded to Tom Ryan's post about that. And I said, yes. Absolutely. I said, when Michael Matz and I had a discussion in October, we had that discussion. And he said, they're very different. They're very different breeds. And to me, it's like you go to a dog show and the golden retrievers are judged on their breed standard. And the Dobermans are judged on their breed standard. They're both dogs. We love them both. But we don't want to crank down a thoroughbred to become what a warm blood is. We want to embrace all the good athleticism and beauty of a thoroughbred and, you know, and have them show against and exclusively with each other. And that's going to probably come down into course design. You know, you'll be able to do the handier turns with a thoroughbred. For the most part, obviously this is all generalization, but I'm thinking, you know, the timing is going to be, you know, with the jumpers, the jumpers, thoroughbreds can compete with the warm bloods and the jumpers a lot easier because it's obviously about time and rails. So with the hunters, but ultimately not going in there with that mindset, thinking we need to take these thoroughbreds and train them down into being the quote unquote dumb bloods. We're not looking for that. We want the breed to be able to be what they were bred to be just in their second career.
I love that. And, you know, I mean, you might be starting, you know, I don't know, this isn't necessarily your goal, but you might be revolutionizing the hunters a little bit. Cause I know there's a lot of commentary in the hunter world about like, why do we have them going like this? Like, why can't the handy round be a real handy round? You know, so you might get people coming in and looking at your thoroughbred hunter derby and being like, this is the way hunters is supposed to be. I'm going to get involved with this.
Oh, yeah. Well, you will have people like me. I had a large pony named Charmingly Lucky, and I loved riding her because she was hot. And all the people would be like, oh, you're going too fast, whatever. I loved it. And that was my style. And that's why, maybe that's why I love the racehorses so much. I guarantee, because there are sport horse riders that have moved over to be exercise girls and men and women in the horse racing world. And that is probably because they crave what you're saying. They crave something that's it doesn't have to be that drawn down and controlled. It can have a easier cadence. I mean, the Warmbloods, I tell my daughter, I said, if the Thoroughbreds raced like the Warmbloods go, their legs would shatter off because they're so heavy hitting, like bam, bam. I mean, you're sitting in the stands and you can hear these Warmbloods, ba-boom, ba-boom. I was like, the Thoroughbreds are so much lighter on their feet and their action is much more efficient. But the Warmbloods, their angles are different because the Warmbloods are bred to go up and down and the Thoroughbreds are bred to reach and pull. And ultimately, we are breeding racehorses first, second career sport horses second is the pie in the sky idea, but ultimately they're all tied together because it's still an athlete.
I love that. Carrie, I feel like we could talk to you for hours. Like, there's so many other questions I have, like other comments you made. I'm like, oh, I wish we had time to circle back to that. So we're going to have you come back on. Like, I'd love to talk to you about like mentoring women in racing. I'd love to talk to you about terminology and thoroughbreds. So many other topics we can cover, but we're out of time for today. Is there anywhere that people can go to learn more about the Thoroughbred Renaissance series right now?
Well, right now it's just in the development phase. So there really isn't, because, you know, it's just going through the process. I will say that Britt and the USHJA have been no short of spectacular. I mean, Ellie and they've just been, I mean, I have honestly been blown away. And the camaraderie and the open arms and the willingness to be like, okay, let's join these two worlds so that both the, I mean, imagine all the new sport horses that could come into these kind of level of shows. And that's, you know, more stalls and more entries, et cetera. So we want it to be a very symbiotic thing. And the biggest thing is hopefully these horses will start being scouted at the racetracks before they're run down. So I'm hopeful that that's one of the big things that will happen.
I love that. All right. Well, folks, watch the news for more about the Thoroughbred Renaissance series. And definitely, Carrie, stay in touch as things develop. Give us a holler. We'd love to have you back on.
Thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed it, except that I told you I'm a queen yapper when it comes to horses.
Oh my gosh, we could have so much fun. Like, if we all had a beer and like unlimited amounts of time, we would have a ball.
Oh, absolutely. Maybe one day. One day, Weka Ocala, maybe at the bar or something.
Don't tempt us with a good time, Carrie.
If you haul horses, you need U.S. Rider. From breakdowns and flat tires to dead batteries and lockouts, U.S. Rider is the nationwide roadside assistance built specifically for horse owners. Join today and travel with confidence. Because when you're hauling horses, peace of mind matters. Visit usrider.org for more information today.
Well, it is that time in the episode that we all love because it tempts us and tempts us to fill our stalls even more past capacity. And that's what we are standing for here at Retired Racehorse Radio. We can bring on Bridget Easley from New Vocations back to the show. Hey, Bridget.
Hello.
Oh, well, I have a very hot topic question
for you. You always do, Joy.
I always do because I'm always on the interwebs and I see the hot topics that come across Facebook. And one of the ones that I have or came across is, we've asked you before about good starter bits for retraining your horse. What happens when they're ready to graduate? They're sound, they're good, they've got their retraining kind of underway. And you want to change out their bit. And you hear on TikTok or wherever it may be that the fatter the bit, the kinder it is to the horse. How true is that? And when is it appropriate to go thicker and when it might be better to actually have a thinner bit?
So while there's some truth to that, right, like the thicker the bit is, the more evenly the pressure from the rider's hands is distributed across the horse's tongue and the bars of its mouth, you know, more so than a very thin bit, which has a small pressure point making it sharper, for lack of a better word. But there is such a thing as too thick. I have seen some gargantuan egg butt snaffles that I'm not even really sure how they sit in the horse's mouths without them feeling like they're playing Chubby Bunny with like 8 marshmallows in there.
Well, that's like kicking off my gag reflex. We got to stop.
You know, taking into account a lot of things with your horse, does your horse have a small face? Does it have a small palate? The bit seat in your horse's mouth, is it big? Is it small? You know, because you can get a bit that is too big, too wide in your effort to be kind for your horse's mouth. And, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it, is sort of one of my, you know, go-tos. If you're riding in that starter bit, and for me, that starter bit is maybe an egg butt snaffle with a copper roller in the middle or a bean that they like to play with. If they're going fine in that and it's a legal bit for whatever event I'm participating in, then I don't really have a particular need to change it. You know, for my Western horses, if I want to develop them into the bridle and work in a one-handed bit and a curb bit, of course, then we have to do something a little different. And that also involves taking into account port size and pressure points on a port, the leverage on the shanks, and a variety of other things that are going to come into play along with the thickness of the bit. But I don't think you need to rush out and buy the fattest bit that you can find. generally speaking, if you belong to any kind of organization, they have a rule book that will list bit diameters for what is and isn't legal. And if you're falling somewhere in the midsection of that, you know, you're not on the thinnest end and you're not on the fattest end, you're probably being kind enough to your horse that you don't necessarily need to worry about changing your bridle if they're going well in what you're working with. If you find that they open their mouth all the time or, you know, don't want to have that bit in their mouth, they're playing with it too much, maybe we try something smaller in their mouth. If they seem overly reactive to pressure from the bit, maybe you try something a little thicker.
I always like your advice because it's very practical, like, you know, like, especially for people, right, who like don't regularly work with a trainer or maybe like, I know bit fitters are a thing now. Like, that is a profession. You can find a bit fitter. I do not know of any in my area.
I don't so either.
We've I'm very much
so many
yes
episodes ago.
Yeah, I think that was before my time, but I remember that episode coming out. Yeah, that is like not a tool that I personally have a lot of access to. So I'm very much like a just try it.
Yeah. You know,
be gentle and see. And I will say, like, Jobber's choices for what he likes are like never the thing I would suspect.
Like, my personal thoroughbred is the same way. My Western thoroughbred, he acts like you are trying to kill him. If you put a happy mouth with a roller in his mouth, he opens his mouth constantly, like you're pulling on him. You're not even sitting on him yet. And he's just mouth everywhere. He's started riding in a little short shank correction bit to go one-handed for his ranch classes, and he loves it.
Yes, I think the correction bit gets overlooked a lot as because you know, people are like, oh, look at the port, oh, it's so mean, and I'm like, yeah, but you have to understand it sits like flat on the tongue and there's a lot of tongue room, and you know, there's a lot of mechanics with that bit that actually like make that quite a nice bit.
Is a tongue relief bit, and I look at it, I'm like, how is this comfortable in your mouth? And
she it looks like medieval, right? Like you see it in the tack room and you're like, ah.
And,
yeah
we don't think about how it actually sits in a horse's mouth. Like we look at how it's sitting on our bridle rack when we're looking at it, but that's not how it sits when it's in their mouth.
Right. And there's no accounting for like equine taste, right? Like I could probably like pry open Jobber's mouth and figure out a little more why he likes what he likes. But like I have all these bits that are marketed as like look at all the nuance and look at all the points of flexion. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's great. I want that. I want, and he likes like the one you see at like the higher by the hour trail place. Like it's one solid curved bit.
Yeah.
And he's like, I like this one. I'm like, of course you do. Like, I don't even know how old that thing is. It's been in this tech. It's like a load bearing bit. Like that's holding the wall up. It's been in here for so long. And that's his favorite. So
yeah. Of your origin story.
Exactly. I feel like it's a good panel discussion, Kristen. We should put a pin in this one and be like, let's get an equine dentist and a bit fitting expert and maybe do like a video one. Be fun.
Yes. Oh my gosh, we could go down so many rabbit holes. I love it. Oh dear. All right. Well, before I derail us all evening talking about bits and how we can never figure out what our horses actually want, Bridget, can you tell us about our adoptable horse of the week? You sent us a little preview video. I have had it on loop the entire time we've been talking about bits. I cannot stop watching this horse.
He's precious. So Waldo is not, you know, what I typically have available for adoption. I usually have the younger geldings, but Where's Waldo is a 2006 gelding. So he's 20 this year, and he is the most delightful grandpa that you've ever met. He's very people-oriented, very engaging in the barn, very nice to have around, and just a good solid citizen. You know, he spent a lot of time on the track, and he has the legs of a warhorse, so he's not, you know, going to go out and go, you know, event or run barrels. But if you want a nice, dependable guy to ride around the farm or take on some trails, put your friends on, he is just a star. And he's black, which is very handsome. And a true black, not even like brown that I'm pretending is black to try to make him sound fancy. He's actually black.
calling me out, me and Wes.
I do it all the time. But his papers even say he's black.
He's a true black. You can tell in the muzzle. If anyone's like, I don't know, my dark bay looks black. If he has a brown muzzle, he's actually bay or brown.
Yes,
like, sorry, it's the bay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, he's a good solid dude who would love a, you know, not a retirement home, because he still really does enjoy going out for rides around the farm and, you know, a nice stroll through the fields and the trees and things. So he would enjoy somebody that wants low key, maybe not riding every single day, but a good all around dude.
Stop, because I'm going to end up with an almost matched set. Because he's got a little, I'm pretty sure, I don't have Wes in front of me, and now I like suddenly can't remember which foot he has a little sock on, but I'm pretty sure that these two would match identically, and I only have one brain cell between my three, so this guy would definitely raise the average intelligence of my surgeon by a lot. So, oh my gosh, he's so cute. He's very sporty looking in these videos. I know, you know, he's 20, so he's not going to go out and burn the world down, but like, he's got like a nice little canter.
Yeah.
Very athletic.
He's a cute little dude going around. He's a nice guy. So someone will really enjoy having him as part of their family.
Gosh, he looks great. All right, you guys really need to get your applications in for this one. He's not going to last. He is spectacular. All right, where can people find Where's Waldo and all of the other fabulous horses you have up for adoption?
You can find us at horseadoption.com or newvocations.org. We have a list of adoptable thoroughbreds and standardbreds to check out, and new ones are added all the time.
You can find our show notes and links to today's guests on the website at horseradionetwork.com. Like us on Facebook and Instagram. Just search for Retired Racehorse Radio. Follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. You can find me on Instagram and Threads at The Horseback Writer, and you can follow along with our new farm adventures on Instagram at Painted Forest Farm. My email is kristen@horseradionetwork.com.
You can find me on Instagram at MisfitMare, and my email is joy@horseradionetwork.com. Thank you so much to our sponsors, Kentucky Performance Products and U.S. Rider, and to our partners, New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program and the Retired Racehorse Project. Don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network, part of Equine Network at horseradionetwork.com, and don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show as it helps us grow. Remember to set your goals high and love to learn from every ride.
Enjoy. Maybe you'll learn this on your riding adventures, but cow side leg.
Maybe I will. Bye, guys.